This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
It's our first U.S. exhibition, and it's super important for us to talk and have a dialogue with American public at this crucial and turbulent times. We also feel like that we've been so welcomed here by Aaron, and thank you so much for that. As you know, activists travel in packs, so we are here, the both of us, and Shachaf at the back, Shachaf Polako, who will also join us to the Q&A. So thank you very much for accommodating this habit. So we want to open with a letter written by activists Gaza-based photographer Mohammed Zanoun, whose photos you are now seeing behind us. Mohammed can't be with us due to the Israeli siege on the Gaza Strip, but we want to include his words in this conversation. So I'll just have we'll just have Ahmed read and share his words.
This letter is from activist photographer Mohammed Zanoun, Gaza Strip. I have been working as a photographer in Gaza for the past 15 years, during which time I covered the last three attacks on the Strip. In 2006, I was seriously injured and was unable to work for the year following due to the surgeries I had to undergo. Many of my colleagues thought I would not be able to return to the field of journalism and photography, but I did. And though the injury has changed me both physically and mentally, I continue my work to this day. To those who are viewing my photographs from the March of Return, a weekly event that began in March 2018 and is ongoing. I hope they convey to you the message of resistance and the message of resistance of the people of Gaza, who have been under siege for the last 11 years. At these protests, you will see mothers who have lost children, youth, and elderly protesting for dismantling of the fence. While viewing them, try to imagine the angry crowds who live in appalling conditions with restricted electricity and poor water quality. Think of the young people of Gaza who have no jobs, but cannot leave because of the siege, who have lost limbs to Israeli bullets, but continue to raise their voice in protest every Friday for a future of freedom. These are photos of life despite the injuries and killings. My photos cannot summarize what I see here on a daily basis, but I'm glad that part of the story is being exhibited to you today in front of your eyes. Thank you.
So we loosely framed this talk under two words, collaboration and apartheid. And just to set the scene, because I'm not sure who's familiar here with our work and our short, like 14 years history of work, Activists has been working as a joint collective since 2005, as Aaron said. And we cover a wide range of political issues in Palestine, Israel. The group was founded by Israeli activist photographers Keren Manor, Oren Ziv, and Yotam Ronen, and Argentinian photographer Eduardo Soteras. They met all in the West Bank village of Bil'in, which was then protesting again to reroute the Israeli wall, which was built on its lands. After a few months of covering the protest, the four wanted to convey the struggle and its complexities to the Israeli media. And so they decided to have a street exhibition. They didn't want to have a gallery talk or a gallery sort of have to preach to the choir. So they decided to do an interventionist action, and they hung hundreds of exhibitions of similar to those you see here in Israeli cities, major cities like Haifa and Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. And following that, they sort of formatted the aesthetics of the collective, which is the grid, kind of photo, rethinking the photo essay through the grid, and started to work on more topics. And that was very much an attempt to contest the biased Israeli media coverage of the Palestinian struggle, and also an attempt to call Israelis into action. And this first exhibition formed both the strategies and started to form the collective's political agenda. And you can see in the book, we have the full statement written. Following this first action, the collective spread to cover many more communities of struggle, and like the Palestinians and the West Bank and within the Green Line, they moved to cover the Bedouin communities in the Nakob area, struggling against displacement, and also expanding to structural racism and its socioeconomic implications in the Israeli society, directed towards Arab descended Jews, Ethiopian Jews, asylum seekers, and migrant workers. And today, our online archive of struggles contains over 40,000 images. And we perceive, as Aaron said, them as belonging primarily to those who are photographed in them. And we share this archive with grassroots groups and advocacy agencies and artists in academia. So in tune with our affiliation with the Anarchists Against the Wall group, we see our work as part of the joint struggle against the occupation. From the protesters' side, we view this act of photography as a political act of co-resistance. And we also see the use of our archive and its dissemination as a continuation of this act. And I want to invite Ahmed to talk a bit about the idea of co-resistance and from your perspective.
Thank you. Thank you, Shiraz, and good evening to everybody. So personally, I don't think that Active Stills is a political photography collective only because it covers political subjects in the region known as Palestine/Israel, and we take side. But even its combination of members stems from a very complicated political view and statement that we have. And here I'm referring to the Palestinian-Israeli partnership, along with internationals, such as we have in Active Stills. So having Israeli-Palestinian joint work is not as simple as we may imagine. It is very, very complicated. I will be honest and say 11 years ago, when I first knew Active Stills, before I became a member, I did not accept it because I knew that there are Israeli members taking part of that collective. Why? Because I used to think that all Israelis living in that region are colonists in somehow. Now in 2019, and after serving more than 7 years in the collective, I still think the same, that all Israelis living there are colonists, except that tiny segment of them who recognize the settler colonial reality that we have, and those great people who are working against that system, such as my great colleagues in Active Stills. So we have our clear political statement on our website, and we say that we in Active Stills, Palestinians, Israelis, and internationals, approach the country that has two names, Palestine/Israel. We approach it from a colonization perspective, and we clearly state that everything is happening there because of a settler colonial construction. And we deal from the area between the river and the sea, as we usually say, as one body, and based on that we cover. So I can summarize and say that we all have the same political idea towards the region where we live, and we all use the same tool, which is photography, and this is how we work. To tell you about the Palestinian society ideas about this, it's not as simple as I just explained. Such partnership is not kind of acceptable because of many elements and reason. Because most of the Israeli-Palestinian cooperation that we have stems from what they call the normalization attempts. And if I want to highlight this term a bit, Palestinians consider normalization is any Palestinian-Israeli cooperation that does not aim to work against the system. So it could be any joint work in music, in sport, whatever. And for them, this is an attempt to make the abnormal look normal. So how can you have like this from the colonized society working with the colonizer in something very far away from something against the system? So that's why they say coexistence is not a valid core right now under such a situation. But what they accept is the so-called co-resistance, and I believe we in ACTIS stills as a simple example of that. And some of you may ask, like, why this strict rule, that why the Palestinian society think like this, like a joint work in whatever could be good to create relations, break walls. But for them, they will ask you that question, and they will tell you, would we have ever asked the colonized people of South Africa to come and sit with their colonizers and do something away from the decolonization process that some people were cooperating and working to end, you know? So peace, coexistence, and all of these terms are valid after we dismantle the system and not before. So the only thing that should be called for right now is the decolonization, and all of these things can happen later. So coexistence, yes, for the Palestinian society. Coexistence, no. To tell you a bit about the advantages, away from the politics, of having Israelis and Palestinians working together. I'm not sure if all of you know that as a Palestinian photographer working in the West Bank, I can only move in about 20% of the country where I live. Hence, this is the part I can cover. While my Israeli colleagues can cover about 80%, these are not very exact numbers because it's complicated to calculate. And my Gazan colleague, Muhammad, that I read his letter, can only move in 2% of the country, which is Gaza Strip. And the international photographers that we have, such as all of you here, I guess, can move in 100% of the country, except for Gaza Strip, they need special permits. So we are unable to cover the whole country, as you see right now, without this cooperation. And even if I have like the privilege to move in some places, that does not mean that I have the access to some certain places, military camps, taking photographs from inside settlements or from between settlers themselves. So personally, as a Palestinian, I think dedicating that privilege that the Israeli and international photographers have is something smart. Because if you dedicate it in the right way, yeah, you can get advantage of that and do a great resistance work, while the opposite can be just taking advantage of the colonization situation that we have. The separation that we have is very, very complicated. So I can say, for example, that I can't invite Shiraz to my city to have a meeting. She cannot enter it because of the Israeli military law. I can't go to Jaffa, Tel Aviv to have a meeting, so that's why we always meet in Area C, for those who are familiar with this term. I don't want to give so much examples, but I will finish by the last one, which is, like, we both came from the same country. She used the airport because she's an Israeli and she's allowed to use it. It's Israeli-only airport. I had to travel through another country and use their airport. So, To finish, I want to say that Active Cells does not only cover the joint struggle that you can all see there in that part of the exhibition of Palestinians and Israelis working together to dismantle the colonization we have, but we see ourselves as good example of that by having Israelis and Palestinians highlighting and adopting the term of coexistence and working under very strict and clear rules, which is something I hope that I can see more example of in the near future, because sometimes when you have like partners working with you from within the system is very strong and can be very effective. Thank you.
Thanks. We don't hang out much together, as you can imagine. In the last 4 days, we had a lot of time to talk, and we just remembered that we were together at the first meeting. It was the first activists' meeting for me and Ahmed, and Ahmed asked me about anti-Zionism. He actually asked all of us Israeli members at the time if we're all anti-Zionist, and that was kind of a turning point for me politically to start to reconfiguring my program and also to learn about the differences and post-anti, how do I situate myself there, and maybe we can talk about it later. But thank you, that was... So it seems, you know, sometimes when pictures are on the wall, so it kind of seems easy, but thank you for highlighting how very exceptional it is to sort of have these spaces together shown in one place. And also it's kind of determining archival decision that we've made, like a structure to structure archive. We have all the different, we have it all chronologically on our website. So we have the different spaces kind of like together, and it's part of our statement. So just to talk about a bit more about the exhibition and sort of the questions and the choices that we've made here. We chose to highlight the Palestinian struggle and the colonial the struggle against colonialism in Palestine, Israel. And we sort of left out a few of the other struggles that we're covering. And I just want to turn the mic a bit to Vered to talk more about the documentary part and how she sees our work different or maybe sort of a new documentary. So just to say that I met Vered in 2011. That was sort of after the big boom of social media and when the term visual activism became sort of a framework under which documentarists and artists and activists were sort of reconceptualizing and reimagining their work under global visual ecology. And I wanted, when I met activists, I really wanted the whole world to know about their work. So I kind of put it into my agenda just to sort of promote the work and also to start writing about the work. And I wanted to articulate the collective's position in that framework of visual activism and to connect it to the histories of documentary photography. And when I met Vered, she was my teacher in Tel Aviv University, and I sort of asked her to marry me intellectually and invited her to co-edit the book with us. And that was the book Aaron was referring to, and try to situate and even maybe celebrate collective work as an effective opposition model to apartheid. So Vered, maybe you can give us your take about how you see activists as unique.
So just Shiraz says how she met me, now I need to say how I met her. It's not the same thing. So I came back to Israel after a decade-long absence, exile. I was studying in the US, I did my PhD at Columbia University. And I came back to Tel Aviv after 10 years of absence, didn't know what's going on. not in the university, not in the political sphere. I heard about Active Steels, but I didn't really know what they were doing or who they were. And one of the terms of my return was to establish a photography studies program that will be interdisciplinary and that will focus on the history and theory of photography. So I was supposed to found this program and to direct it. So I was given my regular histories in photography seminar, and I met Shiraz, and she told me she was a member of Active Stills. So in the next class, I invited members of the collective to come and talk at my class because I had a section on photography and activism. And so Oren Ziv and Yotam Ronen came to my class, and I can literally say that it was a kind of life-transforming experience for me. First of all, I invited those photographers, and for 2 hours they talked. The student didn't leave the class ended a long time ago, but the students were just completely glued to their seats. And I noticed that the vocabulary that they were using was so different than what I kind of expected to hear. They never used the term representation. They never used the term realism. They never said the word objectivity, and they never said the word authenticity. And so that was the first thing that kind of struck me when in their talk. The way they talked about their work was different than what I expected to hear from photographers that work in this kind of trajectory of documentary. And then I realized that what they're facing is a different kind of challenge that maybe was outlined in the kind of scholarship that I was raised on, that I was formed by. I studied at Columbia, which was the kind of 1980s postmodern criticism by Marta Rossler, by Alan Sekula, against documentary photography, which was the argument that documentary photography replicates those kind of power structures and that is consistent the re-victimization of oppressed communities and, of course, the question of the statization of misery, poverty, etc. So that was the way I was formed intellectually. That was my take on documentary photography. But I realized when I met Active Stills that 30 years after, there are new challenges and new questions to be raised. And for me, in a way, their work formed a response to the kind of criticism that was raised against documentary. First of all, the focus within Rossler and Sekula arguments on the brave photographer and the viewer. With Active Stills, it's not the photographer and it's not the viewer. It's the community in which you work with and together, because the photographer occupies two positions, photographer and activist. So he takes part or she takes part in the same struggle. Like the main thing that when Active Stills photographed the demonstrations against the separation wall, they don't stand with the soldiers. They stand with the Palestinians, meaning that when the soldiers fire or extract any form of violence, the photographer also suffers from that violence. So you can see in some of Active Steel's photographs, the photographers that stand near the soldiers and enjoy the kind of privileges that come with being an Israeli, and the fact that they chose to stand with the Palestinians. So it's not about the brave photographer, it's about the community in which you take part. Second thing that was very important in what they were trying to do is the question that it's not about the viewer, it's not about what the shocking photograph that convey misery does to the viewer. And I'm thinking about, you know, texts by Susan Sontag, texts by Ron Bott, you know, it's all about the viewer. Well, for Active Stills, it's not the viewer, it's the user of the images. Who are the images for? And who uses the images? It's about their use value, which also means that it's not about the representation of a certain other. It's about how photography can be used in a kind of performative way, meaning that another thing that was very, very interesting to me in this initial talk, that they showed how specific communities use their own images, how they make banners, posters, use them on their bodies. So these are photographs that are meant not to be viewed, but touched close to the body. And that was very, very, for me, it was very, very strong to see that it's not what is represented, but it's how these kind of images kind of circulate in specific networks that supposed to kind of propagate the struggle. So it's they always, when you create those photographs, it's also collaboratively, you also immediately think how they can be reinserted into kind of certain kind of media platforms and communication strategies in which the struggle can be disseminated. So that was also something that was striking to me and that I thought was really different than what the kind of previous mainstream conceptualization of documentary photography. So that's another thing that was very, very striking to me. Because of course the challenges that activists faces is the fact that the occupation was documented for many, many decades. So it's less about just documenting the occupation, it's about maybe helping to visualize the kind of oppression and colonization that, or the strategies of separation that the occupation creates. So that was something that I felt was very, very strong in the work. And it's not, and another thing that came to mind is the fact that the display systems of active stills that I thought were really, and to this day, for me, are very important. The fact that you don't see it a lot in this exhibition, but that active stills display their works in the actual sites of the conflict. So it's not this separation between the place of the conflict and its representation in a gallery. So like the image in the first room of the exhibition marking the 2-year annual protest in Bilin, you see everything there. And there are other images that you can see in the slideshow that for me, I'm always moved by them, that when, for example, activists made an exhibition in Holot Detention Center, where it's where the Israeli state sends illegally asylum seekers incarcerate them. And when the asylum seeker protested their illegal incarceration, activists followed them for 3 days. They did a kind of walk through Israel. And then those photographs were presented in Holot Detention Center. And the photograph shows the asylum seeker looking at those photographs. So it's who the photographs for, who makes use of them, where are they displayed, that I feel that the uniqueness of active stills comes forward as a collective, that they think about all the aspects of photographic production. How do you create the photographs? Who are they for? Where are they displayed? And how are they circulated? And they take it very, very seriously, and they take responsibility for that. So I think it marks for me a kind of a new stage in documentary practices that, of course, have a certain kind of history. We can think of Joe Spence's work, we can think about AfroPix, and Paul will talk about it, but I think that in the specific kind of what Shiraz called the new media ecology, it marks a specific position. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm from the deep south. Really the bottom tip of Africa. And if we kind of go back to that time, the mid-80s, well, the 80s, when I was a photographer and we formed an organization called AfroPix, we were really engaged in a mighty struggle. That's not dissimilar to what Shiraz and Ahmad have been talking about, and Vered. It was a militarized state, and we were deeply caught up in history. Myself, as a young white boy, I was recruited into the South African Army to fight apartheid's wars. I was sent to the border. And so my, you know, trajectory and my ideas as a becoming a lawyer were soon derailed when I realized I need to do something like much more important. And so I abandoned my law degree. I became a photographer. I became an activist. And so just to give you a little bit of a profile of AfroPix, I mean, we were kind of a group of strays and waves, hippies, misfits. But our common denominator was that we were activists, photographers. We didn't publicly call ourselves that because strategically it was very unsmart. But we were, in a sense, we called ourselves the Taking Sides Generation. And we came together, primarily to create an archive and a body of work that could be shared and that would be there for history. And soon we became this pretty dynamic movement. At the height of AfroPix, we had 60 members. We had 60 stringers, freelancers, 25 members. And you can sort of understand AfroPix as like the Photo League and Magnum all rolled into one. And we also similarly, would make our material available to activist organizations, and our work would appear in community halls, but also we would, you know, have our exhibitions in formal galleries. So one of the big exhibitions that we did early on was called The Cordoned Heart. It was shown at the ICP here in the States, but it was also shown in church and community halls. So we had this sort of parallel, if you like, circulation. I think we shared the same difficulties. We were under surveillance. We were often arrested. Our archive was raided, and our material was used for a treason trial. But we also saw that every time we took a photograph, and similarly to active stills, it was a kind of a victory against amnesia. We were kind of fighting back through the camera. We even used those words, which is somewhat embarrassing now, but we used to say things like, the camera's the weapon, and so on. But I think just to sort of celebrate this and understand this remarkable exhibition, and thank you, Aaron and Shiraz, for inviting me here to be part of it. It's just remarkable, and I'm really struck with how courageous these photographers are, having been in similar situations myself. And you're really up against it. You're up against a military machine. You're up against society that is kind of working against you on every level. And you are, you're a traitor. If you're an Israeli, you're a traitor. If you're a Palestinian, you're the enemy. And in AfroPix, it was very important for us to cross those divides and to build shared solidarity. And we were very successful in crossing those divides and building a family across the races. And we were a non-racial organization. We also taught. We shared skills in the communities amongst workers. And that, just to understand what Vered is saying about how documentary has been so criticized for kind of making aberrations normative, we were not that. We were definitely on the side of history, as it turned out. And on that note, maybe just to round up, I remember very well, in those moments, and I look at these photographs and I think, I know what that feels like. It just, the world is against you. Will this ever change? And the message is, it did, and we won. So, you know, I think the camera and photographers and active stills just take courage in that what you do, not only is it important for memory, to mobilize memory and activism, but that, you know, victory will happen. And like us, you know, we never thought it would, and it did. And believe me, when I photographed Nelson Mandela voting for the first time, I was on the moon. I was like in seventh heaven. So I have in my own country, you know, just seen a 360 turnaround, and I'm just very hopeful that this may happen to you as well.
Thanks, Paul. It just took me back to our first conversation. In 2014, we were researching for the book when we discovered AfroPix for ourselves, and it was striking to see the similarities between the two groups, and it was also a time of great crisis for us because of the recent attack on Gaza, and I think it was sort of meeting you and learning about AfroPix sort of gave us a second wind in a way of sort of believing that things, history can turn around somehow, though it doesn't seem that way at this point at all. So thank you everybody for talking. Maybe we open up for questions, if there are any.
And what you have here and what you see moving forward in your own spaces and combined, what does the future look like? And what is the role of image making and media making? And you're sort of, you know, a Palestine / Israel, what does that look like? And can your image imagine that before it happens?
To be honest, personally, I'm like at this very low point of imaginative strategies as we were talking. But I think for me it's like very, One of the key elements for us is trying to combine struggles. Not combine, that's not the right term in English. As a link, yeah. And we see the role of the photographer as an agent, as well as like a, you know, bringing strategies and experience from one struggle to the other. And we've had a lot of our work is also sort of, you know, connecting. And so I see the main answer to what I personally continue to do is sort of trying to politicize people through, you know, learning more about and bringing images from one community to the other, and sort of have that help in politicizing people. So this is mainly like my own current project with Photo Voice communities and that I do inside 48 Israel. So yeah, but I think a lot of our work also sort of helped to reimagine to imagine what's possible. Also because of what Ahmed was talking earlier about the joint work and how we can sort of re-inscribe that into into a different future. Yeah, maybe.
So I want to add and say that in the field of media, we do not expect to upload a video or a picture and then we have a change in the following. No, it's not that instant. It's a very, very, very long-term kind of work, and we just consider ourselves as a small contributor to what other people are doing in the country to end what we have. So we just put, as we always say, a small brick in a very big wall, and change can happen at any point because of all of this accumulation from me, you, and others. So, yeah, for me personally, what makes me happy about our work and its results is that if I, like every week, if I manage to push, if we manage as a collective to push one person at least to, not to change his mind about this issue, but at least to research more because of a shock that he get because of one of the pictures, or, you know. So if that happens, so this is a very good result we will be happy with. And yeah, this is the role of media, or let me call it media activism that we are doing. So we just try to highlight it from the perspective we see it, hoping that people would see it, understand it from the same perspective, and it's up to them if they want to take action or not. So I hope I answered.
Yeah. Just to give one very short example, it's a bit... during 2012, almost 12 then, we had the, you know, the kind of tent protest camps in Tel Aviv, protesting social, you know, rent control and all that, as part of the Occupy movement. And we hung an exhibition about house demolitions and in Palestine, Israel in general, mainly of Palestinian communities displaced. And there was a lot of Israelis were very angry, and they sort of tore down the exhibition, as they usually do in Israeli public space. As you can see, most of our erased images at the erased exhibitions in the front gallery. So there was just one guy who sort of came and argued with us, why are we doing this? And this is an Israeli internal thing, and why are we mixing the Palestinians and so all that. And so we had this talk, and we tried to sort of move him from that perspective, and didn't work. 3 years later, he became active. He sort of, that point in time was a very fruitful time for Israeli activist grassroots, because it sort of had a lot of new groups forming during that time, and which later went on to Gaz struggle, all kind of different internal struggles inside Israel. And so we meet like 3 years later, and in one protest, and he sort of said, wow, so now I get your point, and great. And like, so it's kind of like this really person by person work. So yeah, it's... A lot of work, yeah.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's extremely illuminating. I have a political question to ask. When perhaps here the press makes a lot of the division of the Palestinians into two groups that fight, Hamas and Fatah, and I was wondering whether this was something you took into account, or whether you were trying to overcome something like a division. I mentioned this because a few years ago I went to Ramallah and I saw a city that looks really very much like, I would say not well off, but at least similar to many capitals in the Middle East and so on. And the images we have of Gaza are absolutely terrifying, so it looks like it's really another world. So I wonder if that is a problem you overcome, you discuss, or whether this political side is something that bothers you?
So the answer is no, simply because we don't have the capacity to cover not only this issue, but many, many other social issues in the Palestinian society itself or in the Israeli society. I just want to highlight here a few facts about Active Cells. Is that one, it is not an organization, it's not an NGO. We are just kind of 14 people right now, all have like full-time and part-time jobs in other places, and we just do this in our free time out of our political belief. And that facts lead us to another fact, which is the shortage of our coverage. So like I always get also questions about some social policy and issues. So I received that question, you are doing this on the Israeli society level, so are you also doing this on the Palestinian society level? So I answered them the same question. There is no intention like to neglect or to avoid the coverage of any issue. I hope we are approaching all of them, if you want to cover them from the same perspective, and we apply the concept of freedom on all of them without any like difference. So it's just a matter of capacity, I believe, and maybe Shiraz has an opinion she wants to add.
I think a lot of the solidarity that came from Israelis from the beginning was, and the other people in the crowd that can correct me, was intentionally came to popular struggle and popular committees in the West Bank, less so in Gaza because of access, and these groups are usually were non-political affiliated. So a lot of our documentation in the first few years followed that these movements, which are trying to be in many places, even though they're not necessarily succeeding, to be not affiliated with Fatah or Hamas or other groups. So it's also where we were invited. We're acting as part of invitation many times. We're not, as Israelis at least, we're not going everywhere and just document. We have a privilege to go everywhere, but it can be really exploitive if we just go and document struggle from an Israeli perspective. And the Palestinian photographers that were affiliated before, and Ahmed now is Ahmed and Muhammad, they're also doing mostly popular struggles that can be affiliated, but they're not necessarily carrying this party political messages. Does that make sense?
So Shiraz, you talked about the grid format, which is the exhibition strategy, but also the website strategy, and everybody should look at the website, activestills.org, yeah? It's a whole other space, and, you know, could you talk a little bit about what that means as a new interpretation of the photo essay? So what would be wrong with the photo essay, and why would you want to present the work in a grid format? What is the significance of it, et cetera?
I think it was quite an intuitive choice at the beginning. So it's not like I won't be talking like for Oren and Karen and Eduardo, which could have conceptualized that. But for me, when I saw it the first time, and also looking through the archive and working a lot with the archive, for me it was this kind of like non-hierarchical choice to sort of situate the images in the same size and sort of have the viewer, you know, sort of work through it and not sort of highlight one image bigger than the other, or first you kind of see it as a one thing and then you have to sort of do the labor of reading it. And it's also have this kind of a cinematic effect for me, which is like kind of like as a board, like how do you say that? Storyboard, kind of like when it's you kind of feel that it's like one a few scenes, and which you need to sort of interpret the what's missing between them, and sort of think of the whole story for yourselves. And we usually have the text right next to the grid, but it will have part of the story, and then you have to sort of, you know, do the work to get the full thing. So it's not like feeding, you know, kind of, you know, it has the sort of the missing parts in embedded into the whatever it is that is depicted.
And another thing is to evade the notion of an iconic image that is one. So trying to think not just, because the idea of going to Berlin is going to Berlin every week. Every week. It's not just one-time thing. It's not an assignment. It's a kind of thing that you do. Every week there is a protest. So to evade completely the idea that one image, one iconic image, but to create something that is more serious-based. So that's also a way to differentiate the kind of ritual of going every week from this kind of photojournalistic work that goes only when there is an event. So in our, if it's every week, then it's not an event, right? So in our introduction to the book, we talk about the non-event. The non-event is the idea that you go every week, and also that you shift your photographic practice from this kind of heroic moments into infrastructure, into how communities come together, how they are formed, what this labor of collectivization, collaboration entails.
There was also an approach of decentralizing the idea of a photographer with an image. So the grid with only having the Active Seals logo on it creates the idea that we work collectively. It's not about any of us trying to be the person behind the camera. It's a collective work, and the grid probably manifested in the best because so it's capture as many images in smaller public spaces and without centralizing around specific images. You wouldn't know usually also because the public space used to be anonymous for the photographers. That helps a lot in that aspect of how we carried it into the streets.
I mean, I also think it links back to the first question about the future, if that was the first question, that, you know, this sort of idea of, obviously, as an activist group, then you're working toward a future, but in a sense, the structure of the grid commits to that future without imagining it in any concrete sense, because, you know, that's utterly, you know, it's really impossible. I mean, it's fabulous to have Paul here, but these three must also be feeling kind of like, you know, a kind of post-apartheid Israel Palestine seems impossible, but to work in this way, I don't know, somehow it's a record of a historical record for a future that you cannot feel and know, you know.
Thanks very much. You'll probably for me get a perspective of, I wouldn't say a typical person who lives in Philadelphia, but an uneducated one who is, and once in a while we'll talk about the situation in the Middle East with my wife or hear something about it on the news. When I look at these pictures, and they all scream injustice. I don't have any, intuitively I almost see that when I look at this. But then I'm hearing outcomes and what's the future look like? And I'm puzzling in listening to the folks talk. And I've heard the terms decolonization, anti-Zionist. And then I think, how do you get to a result? I can see dealing with injustice, but how do you arrive at an outcome that, or I should say, is there, are you guys united at any core belief area about what the situation is in terms of what the outcome needs to look like?
Okay, so this is a question that many politicians around the world cannot answer. But for me and for Shiraz, and I believe for all Active Cells members, except the anarchist one, I believe personally in the one democratic state solution. From the river to the sea, all residents like with equal rights. It could be the example of South Africa and somehow applied again here because it's kind of the same case, but by avoiding the mistakes of the South African solution. And this is not the big problem, but the big problem is the ones that are related to the past of the ethnic cleansing. And here I'm talking about applying the 194 UN resolution, which says that all refugees have the right either to go back to their villages from the refugee camps that they are still living in since 1948 in Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, or at least get compensated. But while saying this, as a Palestinian, I'm totally aware that this is a very big red line for the Israeli side because for them it's a demographic game, and by applying this, the whole concept of the Jewish state will be like gone forever, and this is what they have been working on since long time ago. So to summarize my answer again, is the one-state solution where me and Shiraz can live and have same rights by applying the UN resolutions that we have, and let's call it then the people can call it whatever they want. They can choose a president, then they can even like choose the political system. It's up to them, you know. So I'm not a nationalistic person that wants Palestine and a flag and blah blah. The Palestinian nationalism was only a reaction for the situation that we have. It could be one of the ways for people who believe in it, but personally I don't care.
I agree.
Now the anarchist will answer. Even though I do believe in non-state world, I do realize that states are the current political systems that are there. And I agree about the one state, and I think one way to imagine a one state is to think about pre-European borders of the Middle East and more freedom of movement and connection between different communities. Palestine existed as a culture and society for hundreds of years, if not more, and it doesn't exist under a nation state. The people lived and had family and cultural connections, both geographically in some cities, and if we base the current geographical powers inside the river and the sea and we bring justice and equality and freedom for everyone, that for me, and I think kind of what Ahmed tried to say and also Shiraz, that might be the only way, because some of us went through the belief that two states are a possibility, but in the reality today, two states is another form, in my point of view, of separation and segregation. And also it's not necessarily more the possibility for two states or one state are almost the same possibilities because of the demographic reality on the land with all the settlements. But also from a justice and equality, I believe that one state will bring more justice and more equality.
Just one small thing, and then so it's we are sort of sorry. Sometimes my thought. So we are living in de facto one a binational state, because there is national, you know, there's two national movements working at the same space. One is oppressed and the other is privileged. So we would like to see this oppression over, and whichever agreement is possible, then that will be, And so it's like, as an Israeli, I would just want to see this thing over, you know, this.
Okay. Well, first, thanks for the incredible work that you do and for organizing this exhibition. My question is for the Israeli folks that are part of the collective, and I am not sure if I am correct about this, but international level, it seems that like there is a good percentage of Israeli people, I mean in Israel, that are like actively supporting or justifying the occupation. So how is for you, like for the Israeli people in the collective, you know, to be living in Israel in those circumstances, like you know, how is your work and the work of the collective received there?
Thank you. Not very well. we get, as I said earlier, we are most of our exhibitions in public space are erased in like 24 hours tops. And we have not exhibited in 48 Israel for quite a long time. The last exhibition we had was for the book, which was in a very kind of like lefty, small kind of school, art school space. So it's becoming much harder and harder to work. Also, the Israeli news is very right-wing, center-right-wing, and there is... So yes, it's becoming more and more, and now with coming elections and all the incitement, I think the left now is even more sort of coming, narrowing into very few, I don't know, like thousands, like a few hundred. Like the activists are like, you know, most of them have fled, I'm kidding, but just like went to sort of live in Berlin, or there's a lot of the anarchist group have left the country. So it's becoming more and more hard. I don't know if that's like an elaborate question, but it's not like,
Well, there are specific platforms where active jails. There is the local call, which has both an Hebrew website. It's called Sicha Mekomit, and it has an English version website, which is +972. And for many years, 972. Sorry. And for many years, Actisil provided most of the images to these specific platforms, which kind of challenged the biased view of the main media outlets in Israel. And Actisil also provides images to non-governmental organization, and so it's not invisible, but I think it's always displayed in very specific milieus. And this is something that we really outline in the book. We give all this information.
So for this matter, it is very much easier for me as a Palestinian, because when I do this political work, I go home, I'm surrounded by people like me. Like, we are all on the same side, so I don't face these problems. But for them, and I had this discussion many times with them, like, they go back home and they are the different people surrounded by tens of thousands. And the conflict sometimes is not only among friends and like community, it could be inside their houses. And here I'm talking about parents who are totally supporting the Israeli ideas, you know, or brothers. And that could be the biggest conflict that you have in your life. So for me, this is very much easy compared to them, because I have been hearing like some difficult stories that led some of them leaving the country by the, like, because of that.